This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. The Senate gets set for a voting marathon on health care. Jared Kushner testifies about meeting with Russians. What's going on between President Trump and Attorney General Jeff Sessions? And changes in the White House communications staff. It's been another hectic week in politics, and joining us to discuss it are political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU politics reporter Howard Wilkinson. Ken and Howard, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
I love that this week is a special three-hour program.
It might need to be at this rate. And I should note, too, that if you'd like to join our conversation today, you can call us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Ken, before we get the conversation going, what is the trivia question for today?
Well, among the other bits of news in the past week or two is the fact that Sean Spicer, or shall I say Melissa McCarthy, resigned as the White House press secretary. So my trivia question is, who was the last White House press secretary who, after leaving that job, ran for office?
So a pretty basic question there. Last press secretary who, after leaving office, or leaving the press secretary's position, ran for office. I managed to mangle that, Ken, but I think I got
it. No, that's it. That's right.
That's the right question. If you think you know the answer to that, give us a call, 513-419-7100. And the first correct caller wins a political junkie button, 513-419-7100. Ken, I'm wondering if you can help us out here with this whole health care issue and sort this out for us, because I've heard this referred to as Votorama. Coming up, which sounds confusing enough in itself. What's going on here, and where do things stand in the Senate's health care debate?
Well, everything we thought was dead. We thought that health care overhaul was dead after everything stopped working. And then they decided to have one more go at it, and of course, they needed the vote of John McCain for it to pass, because you needed 50 votes, and already you had two Republicans, Lisa Murkowski of Alaska and Susan Collins of Maine, voting no, we do not want to proceed with the vote. So on Tuesday, in a very dramatic moment, John McCain, just off after this very serious, very sad diagnosis and serious surgery to remove a blood clot from his brain, and that the fact that he has brain cancer, flew into Washington, came in to vote, where they got a standing ovation in the Senate, and then voted yes. To say yes, we should go on with debate with health care. That led to a 50-50 tie. Mike Pence, the vice president, broke the tie, and therefore the Senate was going on with the debate. I should say that right after his vote, John McCain gave a very stirring speech on the Senate floor, saying that the process that the Republicans have brought health care to has just been wrong. It's been flawed. It should go through committee. It should have input from the Democrats. It should be bipartisan and all that. But then Tuesday night, on a vote to basically repeal Obamacare and put in another bill instead, while 9 Republicans voted no, and it only got 43 votes total, while 9 Republicans voted no, John McCain voted yes for the bill, for the repeal and the replacement. So that seemed very, very strange to me. Then yesterday...
Wait, there's more?
It doesn't stop. We're talking about Votorama. Then yesterday there was a Rand Paul bill that basically was a clean repeal of Obamacare with no substitution at all. And that only got 45 votes. 7 Republicans voted no, including John McCain. So John McCain voted yes the day before, then he voted no on this one, and it went down to defeat. What looks like is going to happen now, it seems like it's going to be a smaller, more modest bill that may repeal only a few provisions, but they would be major. They would basically remove the mandate that has most Americans, that forces most Americans to carry health coverage. It would remove the mandate on large employers to offer their employees coverage. The Republicans call this the skinny repeal. I still don't know if this has 50 votes, but I think that final vote is going to be taken tomorrow. If that does go down, it's interesting. In 2015, 2015, when the Republicans, when Obama was president, all the Republicans, except for Susan Collins, nearly all the Republicans voted for repeal. Now, knowing that this could be law, the Republicans are much more reticent, much more nervous about it. But the skinny repeal is possible tomorrow. It, of course, wouldn't get rid of Obamacare. It would tweak it. But even those tweaks, the CBO said that 15 million more Americans would be uninsured and premiums would zoom up. So the Republicans are not finished yet, but they have maybe a day or so left before we can say, and we thought we said it before, but maybe we can say after tomorrow that if it doesn't pass, any kind of overhaul is dead for now. Because I'm sorry I'm hogging up this conversation, but basically...
No, my head's just spinning, Ken.
I know Howard fell asleep, but the point I want to get is that it doesn't matter what the Republicans pass. They want to pass something, then they can go to the House with their bill. The House can go with the negotiators with the House bill, and then something could still change. So even if it's minuscule what they pass, they need to pass something to keep this going. Otherwise, it's dead.
Howard, what are your thoughts?
Well, I absolutely agree that they got to pass something, and if they don't, I mean, they're just dead in the water. I mean, I don't know what happens next. Have you ever seen, Ken, any explanation from McCain about his first vote?
No, and I know something, and I've been thinking about that, and I've looked for explanations, and no, because he gave this very impassioned speech Tuesday night. You know, this is terrible, a pox on both your houses, the way the Democrats passed Obamacare, the way the Republicans are pushing their thing, it's with no input on both sides. Of course, that's not true. The New York Times reported this week that the original Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, had 188 Republican amendments attached to it, and yet it got no Republican votes. This bill, the McConnell bill, has zero Democratic amendments. They voted down every Democratic amendment. So, but no, as far as McCain, there's of course some obnoxious, some wise guy, some snarky comments on social media about the condition of his health and things like that. But no, it doesn't make sense for me. I mean, I know he's a maverick and I know he goes his own way, but no, it made no sense to me.
Yeah, it absolutely made no sense because that was a brilliant speech. I mean, it was
yes.
A powerful speech. And then suddenly he turns around the next day and seemingly just goes again.
Same day, yeah. Yeah, that night, yeah.
Hey, Ken, would you give us the trivia question again? Let's see if we can get some more people on the line to try this.
The last press secretary who left that job and then went on to run for public office. Okay. White House press secretary.
Okay. So if you think you know the answer to that, call 513-419-7100. And the first correct caller is going to win a political junkie button. What do you think the Democrats make of all this?
Well, it was interesting on that famous vote that we waited for McCain and Ron Johnson of Wisconsin to cast the votes that gave it a 50-50 tie. The Democrats didn't even vote. Matter of fact, the Republicans were the only ones voting. They were sitting back and enjoying it. And then after McCain voted yes and Ron Johnson voted yes, then suddenly the 48, the 50, the 48 Democrats voted one by one to vote no. So the 48 Democrats just sat back and watched it. And when they were joined by Collins and Murkowski, they had 50. But, of course, the name of the game is having 51, because if it's a 50-50 tie, you have Mike Pence. The Democrats are just... They've said from the beginning that we're willing to work with the Republicans, and there are Republicans like McCain and Susan Collins and others who've said we want it to be bipartisan, but the Democrats are saying we also want to take the repeal of Obamacare off the table, and Mitch McConnell is not willing to do that.
Howard, I wanted to ask you, what is Senator Rob Portman's position on all this? Where does he stand on this?
Well, Rob Portman's problem with this whole thing is he wants to be assured that there is going to be a pot of money in whatever is passed to help those persons who have signed up for Medicaid under Obamacare expansion in Ohio and other states where they're getting Medicaid money under Obamacare. He's worried about those people. He wants those people to have some kind of health care funds that they can have access to, because these are not high-income people. These are people who are basically the working poor. They are children. They are people that just they're elderly, and he's concerned about them. Now, he didn't have to worry about re-election next year, but he does worry about – the fact that his image in Ohio.
And the opioid money, too.
Oh, and opioid. Yeah, absolutely. Opioid money is very important to him.
And it's interesting, when the vote came on that Tuesday night, the vote to repeal Obamacare and put in the substitution, Portman voted for it. But yesterday, when the straight repeal came up, he voted against that. He's one of the seven Republicans who voted against that.
Yeah, there was no way he was going to vote for straight repeal. That just wasn't going to happen.
So do we ever get a resolution to this, Ken?
No. I mean, I don't know if there are votes today. There may be some more votes. We think the final vote, the so-called skinny repeal, may be either today or tomorrow. And again, if it goes down tomorrow, if it doesn't get the 50 votes, I don't know where the Republicans go from there, unless they just say, okay, we did our best, and now it's on to tax reform. But I don't know where they go.
I think they move on if this does not pass. I mean, they just cannot keep going with this. They're running out of ideas. They're running out of plans.
And, you know, it's interesting that McConnell said that the Democrats are free to offer amendments now to this bill, but the Democrats say, we don't even know what bill we're talking about. We don't even know what the language is. They want us to vote within a day or even less on stuff that we don't even know. We haven't seen what the wording is yet. So it's. I've never really seen the Senate act like this and perform, or lack of performance like this.
So what do you think happens if this all falls apart, Ken? What do you think happens to Mitch McConnell? How is this going to reflect on him?
Well, you know, once upon a time we used to talk about how canny and how persuasive he is and how he's a master. And when he's in the opposition, he is. But it's hard, you know, as John Boehner certainly learned and Paul Ryan is learning in the House, it's hard to, you know, get 50 voices, 50 votes in the same room when you have Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski on one side and Ted Cruz and Rand Paul on the other. So it's not an easy job. And for all the talks about how he's a great arm twister and he's the best since Lyndon Johnson, he's not having a good time of it. And I think, you know, they were in some whispers, just like you hear whispers about it's time for Nancy Pelosi to go in the House, it's time for Mitch McConnell to go, but who would replace him? I can't say. I mean, John Cornyn, who's the number two Republican in the Senate, is not seen as a strong leader at all by anybody. So it's I think they're stuck with him, and I don't mean it pejoratively, but he's probably the best they can get.
Howard? He really had his hands full of this one, where he had to try to get Ted Cruz and Rob Portman on the same page on a piece of legislation. That's very difficult to do. He had to make some, you know, very big compromises. But, you know, certainly this is not going to reflect very well on him nationally, but he's not very popular nationally anyway. Not very popular in Kentucky.
I was going to say, and it's interesting that one of his biggest opponents is his fellow Kentucky Republican, Rand Paul.
Exactly, yeah.
And we will continue our discussion with Ken and Howard, and we'll get to the trivia question. You can join us, 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Joining us this afternoon, political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU politics reporter Howard Wilkinson. And you can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Ken, let's see if we can find somebody who can handle this trivia question. Give it to us again, and then we'll see if any of the callers have this correct.
The last White House press secretary who, after he left that, he or she left that job, ran for public office.
Okay. So, let's see. Mary in Bridgetown. Go ahead. What do you think the answer was?
Hi. I'm not sure. Was it Rahm Emanuel who ran for mayor of Chicago?
Rahm Emanuel was elected mayor of Chicago, is the mayor of Chicago, but he was never the White House press secretary. He was the White House chief of staff.
Mary,
that's what I thought. Thank you.
Mary, thanks for the try. We appreciate
that was a good guess.
Yeah. Let's see if Rick knows the answer. Hi, Rick.
Hey, Pat Buchanan?
Pat Buchanan actually did run for president in several incarnations, but he was a White House advisor to Richard Nixon, but never the White House press secretary.
Okay.
All right, thanks.
Okay, thank you. Let's see, Demetrius. Who do you think it was, Demetrius?
T.G. Meyer.
I'm sorry?
P.G. Meyer?
D.D. Myers was Bill Clinton's press secretary, I think first press secretary, but she never ran for public office.
Okay, let's see if Jerry has the answer. Jerry, who was it?
The answer is Pierre Salinger.
Pierre Salinger is the correct answer.
Ah, very good.
Very good. Very good. Excellent.
Congratulations, Jerry. Way to go.
Let me just tell you, it's kind of... Yeah, it was a long time ago. It was 1964. Let me do a quick background, because it's a pretty interesting story. Pierre Salinger, of course, was John F. Kennedy's press secretary. Lyndon Johnson kept him on after the assassination. Salinger resigned in 1964 to run for the Senate from California, beat a guy named Alan Cranston for the Democratic nomination, and then... as he was running for the office, the Democratic incumbent, who wasn't running again, died. Governor Pat Brown appointed Salinger to the Senate, and then Salinger went on to lose the Senate race that year to George Murphy, one of the rare Democratic losses in 1964. So Pierre Salinger was a press secretary, then ran for the Senate, was appointed to the Senate, but lost his bid for the election.
Hey, good job,
Howard,
Jerry.
Howard?
Yes.
Howard, wake up.
Yes,
sorry.
Yes.
Did I put Howard to sleep?
No,
again?
Howard's here. He's fine.
Okay. I talk a lot.
Calm down.
I'm sorry.
Calm yourself.
I get excited with someone said this stuff.
Well, Jerry, Jerry, good job. Stay on the line. We'll get your address where we can send your prize to. So congratulations on that. Again, 513-419-7100. If you would like to join our conversation, you can also email talk at WVXU.org. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Ken, I'd like to turn to the feud that President Trump is having with Attorney General Jeff Sessions. I just keep looking at this and thinking how odd this is, because Sessions has been one of Trump's biggest supporters.
I hate using the word remarkable, because everything that seems to happen in this White House is remarkable. But Jeff Sessions, this is just so unnecessary and remarkable. Jeff Sessions was the first senator to back Donald Trump. He was a loyal, unswavering supporter of his. He backs his positions 100%. He's probably far more conservative than Trump is in real life. But what happened was, because he, when he was a Trump surrogate, met with the Russian ambassador during the campaign, he decided in March, he said, you know something, I'm going to, because of all the investigation into Trump's alleged Trump involvement with Russia and Russia's alleged involvement and interference in the campaign and the election, I'm going to recuse myself as Attorney General from anything to do with Russia. Okay, that was announced in March. A week ago, all these months later, a week ago, Donald Trump talks to the New York Times and says how he's disgusted and disappointed by Sessions' decision to recuse himself. Because when Sessions recused himself, the acting attorney general in that sense was Rob Rosenstein, who then appointed Robert Mueller to be a special counsel for Russia. Everything about this is about the Russian investigation. So Trump is furious that Jeff Sessions recused himself, which ultimately led to the appointment of Robert Mueller. And it's leading a lot of people to think that somehow either Trump is going to force Sessions, because of all this humiliation, to quit on his own, or he's going to fire him and then name his own attorney general, who could then supersede Mueller and lead the Russian investigation.
And I think if he did fire Sessions, he would have one heck of a time trying to get somebody through the Senate.
Well, what he can do, of course. He can have a recess appointment.
Yeah, but you know
if
how
the Senate goes...
There's a way around
if the Senate
that.
There is. If the Senate goes out for the first 2 weeks in August, or the second 2 weeks in August, with a recess, you could name an attorney general without the Senate's consent, and he or she would serve until January of 2019. Democrats know that, and so what they're planning to do is have a pro forma Senate session every 3 days, so there's really no recess. I mean, they are scared to death that what they're going to do is he's going to fire Sessions, name a new attorney general, who in turn would probably fire Mueller. And I mean, of course, it sounds like the Saturday Night Massacre all over again. But, you know, I never thought he would fire James Comey, and he did. So don't underestimate what Donald Trump could do or would do.
And the pro forma thing about this, you know, that they could keep the Senate in session just by having one senator walk onto the floor of the Senate every two or three days, bang the gavel, and walk out. And that would keep the Senate in session, and that would prevent him from doing a recess appointment because the Senate would not be in recess.
You know what's remarkable here? Here's that remarkable word again. But between in the week or so since the New York Times interview, and then Trump had a press conference the other day with the Lebanese prime minister next to him, talking about what a disappointment and a failure and a loser that Jeff Sessions is, he has not spoken to Sessions in all this time.
Yeah.
Everything has been a tweet or a press conference or an interview with a newspaper, but he hasn't sat down with his own attorney general. That is just beyond belief.
And this was interesting, too. Head of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Republican Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa, tweeted, how appropriate he tweeted, it seems to fit in this case, that his committee's agenda is set for the rest of the year. Judges first, sub-cabinet second. He's saying there's no way they'll even consider a new attorney general this year. So they're sending Trump a message, don't even go there.
The Republicans don't want any part of this either. I mean, they really don't. They've got enough on their plates.
Right, Sessions was one of their own for the longest time.
Yeah.
And only two Republicans, well, or maybe only one Republican voted against. I don't know if any Republican voted against him, maybe one, but for the confirmation. Mm-hmm. I mean, whatever you think of Jeff Sessions, he was not an unpopular guy with the Senate, and the Republicans are watching what Trump is doing to one of their own. This is interesting. There's a Senate race going on right now in Alabama for a special election for the seat that Sessions used to hold. One of the leading candidates announced this week that we should all agree to get out of the race and have Jeff Sessions take the seat back. I mean, that's unheard of, but it's very, very strange what's going on there.
Hey, but Ken, do you think this is all just because Sessions recused himself, or is there something else at work here?
No, I think it's all about Russia. I really think it's all about Russia.
Yes.
That he blames Sessions for the appointment of Robert Mueller. And that's it. I mean, everything from his son to Jared Kushner to Manafort to all these people testifying, all these leaks going on. Trump seems to be obsessed with what's going on with Russia, and ultimately he puts the blame at the feet of Jeff Sessions.
513-419-7100 if you would like to join the conversation. And then, Howard, you have Trump talking about pardoning people.
Yeah.
I mean, does he have the power to do this before anyone's even been charged?
Well, the president has an absolute power to pardon even before a crime has been committed or someone has been charged with a crime. Whether or not he would use that in this case just to prevent Mueller from conducting his investigation, that would be, to me, an incredible stretch and would just make it worse and worse and worse for him.
And remember when Richard Nixon, when President Ford pardoned Richard Nixon, he said he wasn't charged with anything.
He wasn't
officially
charged with
anything. He wasn't anything, but just in the event of upcoming, in the future, I pardon you from any kind of prosecution. So there's history right there.
513-419-7100 to join us, and let's talk to David. Hi, David.
Hi. When I lived in Virginia, I remember sitting in a town hall meeting with Congressman Bobby Scott about 18, 20 years ago, and he talked about giving everyone a Medicaid card. So, for example, when a baby's born, they're on the mom's Medicaid, and then when they start pre-kindergarten, when they're 4 years old, they get the Medicaid card. What's so hard about that?
I don't remember this at all. I mean, this is an interesting concept. Obviously, the Republicans are, whatever incarnation they have of health care, Medicaid is going to be cut by billions of dollars, and that's part of the goal, and that's what so many Republican governors like Kasich, among others, are fighting against, this cutback of Medicaid, which is so successful. But I never heard of everybody getting a Medicaid card. I mean,
I think it's House Bill 363. Do I have that number right?
I don't know that. I don't know that.
I mean, I know I've heard debate over making Medicare universal, making Medicare available to everybody.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but not Medicaid, no.
Yeah. And my other question is, we are all aware that Constance Goodell Newton, attorney in Columbus, has announced her campaign for governor of Ohio 2018?
No, I don't.
Hashtag Green Enter.
Oh, I see. Okay.
The green candidate. Then. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
David, thank you for the call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Let's talk to Mark now. Hi, Mark.
Hi. How's it going?
Good. Thank you.
Thanks for the discussion. I would just like to ask, now I think every American is in favor for a better health care bill, but what I don't understand and what the Republicans hate so much and adamant about in order to repeal Obamacare. I mean, is it just strictly political, or does it have incredible flaws that just completely need to be erased?
Okay.
And I will take my comments off the air. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
I think that's a very good question, because even Democrats have acknowledged that there are things. Bernie Sanders, during his debates with Hillary Clinton, talked about there are things that need to be tweaked or just changed. And Hillary would say, "Oh, you're going to dismantle it all because it took us so long to pass this." But Democrats and Republicans agree there are problems. Premiums are high. There are a lot of people who are getting much higher premiums. Deductibles are really being very, very high. So both sides agree with it. My feeling, my sense, is that Trump really has no idea. I mean, this is just my observation, that he really has no idea what's in this bill at all, whatever the bill is. And, of course, the McConnell bill is no longer what it used to be. But I think Trump just wants a victory to say, I promise we would repeal Obamacare on my first day or the first thing, and I'll make it happen. But I don't think he has a sense of anything that's in there. But Democrats will acknowledge, and even Republicans who are sympathetic will say, that there are changes that need to be made. And I think the McCains and the Portmans are in that category. I mean, they all voted to repeal Obamacare in 2015, and not because it was just political, because I think they think that things could be better. So there are some lawmakers who say, let's just start from scratch, or at least let's take the Affordable Care Act and work on what's unpopular and what's not working, rather than repealing it outright. And that's basically the fight that's going on in the Senate right now.
Yeah, Howard, what do you think?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And there are Democrats who would do that. Not an inconsiderable number of them. They would sit down with the Republicans and try to work out some of these problems. Because there have been problems with the high premiums and the deductibles and that sort of thing. And you've got, insurers leaving Ohio and other states, just because they don't want to be in this market. So, yeah, Democrats, I think, would be willing to sit down and say, okay, let's work out the things that are wrong with Obamacare and keep the things which are generally agreed upon are good about Obamacare.
513-419-7100, and Nancy joins us now. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. Yeah, I just have a comment. I felt like earlier Howard was kind of describing Rob Portman as a moderate on the healthcare issue, and I don't see him that way. I feel like he's been pretty weak about standing up, in terms of the Medicaid expansion, which has so helped so many Ohioans, but Portman hasn't been willing to really take any kind of controversial stand on that. And, he says that he's for the opioids, helping people with opioid addiction, but he knows that if the Medicaid expansion goes away, that's going to be very difficult. And he has some amendment, I think I voted down yesterday, to add $100 million
right,
as a way maybe to help these folks. And it's my understanding that that is not nearly enough money to really keep everyone on the Medicaid, or help people who've been helped by Obamacare through the expansion.
No, you're absolutely right. That is how much he had proposed, and it is not enough. But, that was what he was demanding of Mitch McConnell, was that there be some money in this bill that would help, at least to a certain extent, some of these people who are going to lose Medicaid coverage. And, you can characterize him as whatever you want, but he did have that as a priority. And I think you're absolutely right. It's not enough. it's not sufficient. And John Kasich will tell you that, too.
Right. Kasich, to me, has come off as much more moderate on this issue than Portman.
Yes.
Of course, he's...
Well,
I mean, Portman doesn't have to worry about re-election for quite some time. So,
sure.
Maybe that's part of it.
Nancy, thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it. Again, 513-419-7100 if you'd like to join us, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Peter emailed us, and his question is, he's talking here about the transgender military ban that President Trump tweeted yesterday. He's wondering what would be the real fallout from that if it is enacted.
Well, I'm laughing. It's not funny, but I'm laughing because this is a major change in policy, and the president did it in a tweet without talking to his Secretary of Defense, without talking to military leaders. He announced a ban on transgender people being serving in the military, and on Twitter. And let me just tell you the little background. There's a defense spending bill that's up for a vote this week. It's $790 billion, something like that. And there's a dispute in that bill that whether the government should pay for whether taxpayer money should be paid for gender transition, for surgery and things like that. So there's some conservatives saying this doesn't belong in the bill. So Trump saw this fight and said, forget it, get rid of all transgender people from the military. There are thousands, maybe as many as 15,000 by some estimates.
Yeah, I've seen anywhere from 4,000 to 15,000. Sorry, Kim, but
of transgender people in the armed services, do they have to come home immediately? Do they immediately out of the service? To his credit, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff today issued a proclamation saying there is no change in policy at this time. We'll talk. I mean, they were just blindsided. The Pentagon was just blindsided by this and infuriated by this, that it would happen without any kind of consultation with the president. The president just didn't even seem to know the ramifications of what such a tweet would. He took a little fight over a spending bill and suddenly became this tremendous thing. Can I use that word remarkable again?
Yeah, yes. There you go.
Yes.
Howard, you were saying that they've been studying this, that they're studying this, and they
were supposed to release the results
of this. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. And it's part of the defense bill, as Ken was pointing out. And that's one of the reasons that John McCain came back, because he wants to get this defense authorization bill through Congress. But, you know, the Republican reaction to this tweet about transgender people getting tossed out of the military was not good. People were saying, look, you know, this is not the way we do things. You know, we've got, you know, you've got a military establishment, you've got Joint Chiefs of Staff, you've got a Secretary of Defense, you've got people looking at this, and they make a recommendation to the president, and then the president can make a decision. It's not just, you know, tweeting in the middle of the night. And that's not how you make policy. And that's what John McCain told him. So, you know, you don't make policy like this through a tweet. You do it through a very structured process.
We will continue our conversation with Ken and Howard. You can join us, 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney, and joining us this afternoon, political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU politics reporter Howard Wilkinson. You can join our conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Mike is joining us right now. Hi, Mike.
Hello.
Go right ahead.
I just wondered if you guys had... I'm hearing a lot of the pro side of Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act. But what I'm not hearing is any talk about the fact that our premiums here in Ohio generally went up about 86% in the last 7 years, and our deductibles at least doubled.
Okay.
Well, I mean, we did talk about that as one of the problems, one of the drawbacks of Obamacare.
Yeah, that has been one of the criticisms, the increases right. in premiums and deductibles, Ken.
Yeah.
No, exactly. I mean, you know, Mike is right. That's why many Democrats say this is really, and look, there's no question that Obamacare has put many millions of Americans, given many millions of Americans health care that they otherwise did not have. But at the same time, this was a problem from the beginning, that premiums were rising and deductibles were rising. And I think that was clear in even John McCain's speech Tuesday night, that something must be done. It's not, we shouldn't do it the way that the Republicans are doing it, by ramming it through with no committee hearings and now no input from the Democrats. But the point is that something has to be done because of all these rising costs. Now, there's no question. I mean, I'm surprised Mike says that, because I think most people agree this is one of the problems with Obamacare, that even though it's added people to the rolls, it has also been much more expensive for so many people.
Yeah, much
yes,
costlier.
Absolutely.
Let's talk to Bob now. Hi, Bob.
Hi, how you guys doing?
Good, thank you.
Okay, my question is, as you kind of look at the poll numbers right now, you know, both for Obamacare, which are dismal, Trump's numbers, and then the generic vote for the Democrats has been rising. It seems like the Republicans are only worried about being primaried on the right. Is that realistic in purple states like Ohio?
Howard, you want to take that? Because I'll give a national view. You could be Ohio
well,
view.
Yeah, I mean, they are going to be. I mean, some of them will be. Now, if you look at, like, the governor's race, you've already got four candidates in the race, and you've got somebody who is, you know, a little more centrist, more moderate. Then you've got somebody like Jim Renacci, who is a Trump Republican and makes no bones about it. But, you know, I think some of them are worried about being challenged by Tea Party type candidates, and they should be, because it's quite a force in Ohio politics now.
Let me just say two things about what Bob just said. First of all, about Obamacare being unpopular, it was unpopular yeah. until the Republicans came up with their bill. The Kaiser Foundation just came up with a poll, I guess, a couple of weeks ago. For the first time, Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, had 51% approval. And I suspect the reason Obamacare has become popular is because the Republican alternative has become so unpopular with the drastic cuts in Medicaid and things like that. So I think only because of what the Republicans have done has Obamacare become popular. As far as the fear on the a primary from the right, even in blue states, that doesn't mean the Republican parties in these states have become moderate, even though, like, for example, in Massachusetts, which is a very Democratic state, there are a very strong Republican in the Republican primary, very strong Tea Party conservatives who are willing to, you know, vote out their Republican, moderate Republicans if they veer too much away from the Trump line. So even in blue states, I mean, where Trump may not be popular, the Republican Party can be very, very conservative. And if you cross Republican leaders, vote against Trump in the Senate or in the House, whatever, the Tea Party will be heard.
Yeah. Let's talk to Will now. Hi, Will.
Hi. As of the tone of the conversation here, about 85% of Americans and 100% of the rest of the world views this as the worst crisis in human history. Okay? Be discussing the intrigues of these very disturbed groups of politicians, of Republicans, out of the 16 candidates. We see each one really, just really disturbing statements. And this current.
So will you're saying people are more concerned about what, nuclear war, than they are about other issues?
About what we might
be facing with North Korea, and is that what you're getting at?
Well, that and the fact that the news isn't what the Republicans keep trying to do with this to promote the fact that Obamacare, there's something wrong with it. There isn't. There never was, other than what they did to put up roadblocks to their influence with insurance companies and to present this. The Harvard and the New York Times 30-year study found that American mainstream media is biased against Democrats 11-1.
Let's stick to the main point here. The idea that these are not issues that Americans and other people in other parts of the world are concerned about. Ken, what do you think of that?
Well, I know we didn't have time to have him, have Will talk about everything he wanted to say, but I was interested in everything he did say because, I mean, the thought of the media being biased against Democrats, I do think there is an inherent bias against who's ever in power. I mean, Clinton, Bush, Obama, Trump have not been treated, with kid gloves by the media, but if you ask a conservative Republican and ask him if he or she thinks that the media is biased against Democrats, they'll say, what, are you crazy? They're all anti-Trump. But I still, if Will is saying that we're spending too much time on the palace intrigue while the whole country is falling apart, I do agree with that. I mean, I think there are major, major things that are not being addressed in this country, and all we're doing is talking about Trump's tweeting and his personality and his. But I mean, we don't know anything about what his business is doing, what his children are doing. There are so many. I hate to say this, but there are so many untruths coming out of the White House that we go from fire to fire to fire, tweet to tweet to tweet, without looking at the big picture.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, it's we're following every tweet that comes out of the White House, and they're all provocative in some way or another, and some of them are relevant and some of them are not. And there are a lot of issues that are not being addressed, and they're not being addressed by the Trump administration, they're not being addressed by Congress, and they're not being addressed by the media either.
Will, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. And Ken, the president's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, testified before the Senate Intelligence Committee in a closed-door session. And afterward, he told reporters that he didn't collude with Russia, nor does he know of anyone else in the Trump campaign who did so. Just in general, where is the Russian investigation headed at this point? I mean, where do things stand?
Well, apparently Robert Mueller is doing amazing things. I mean, not only he's hiring more people, but they're looking not only into the Russian investigation and what kind of influence he may have had with the Trump family. And we do know that Don Jr. and Jared Kushner and Paul Manafort had that previously undisclosed meeting in June of 2016 that said they were invited by Donald Trump Jr. and said in the body of the letter, in the subject line, something like lawyer involved with Kremlin has dirt on Hillary, and then Kushner comes out and says, oh, I had no idea what it was, and I don't know anything about collusion. To me, if you're a member of the family or a member of a campaign or anything, and you're meeting with Russians who have dirt on Hillary Clinton, and they're close to the Kremlin, doesn't that sound like collusion? I mean, that sounds like the definition of collusion. So it just seems like that everybody denies everything until a new fact comes out, and then they say, well, I forgot. I have to amend my security clearance form. I forgot about that meeting with the Russian ambassador. This is what Donald Jr. is doing. That's what Kushner is doing. And so the Senate and the House intelligence committees, even the Judiciary Committee, are investigating it, as is Mueller. And the question is whether Mueller, I mean, look, we don't know if he's on a clock or whether the end of Mueller is near because of a new attorney general. We'll wait and see. But apparently, Trump is hearing footsteps, is my understanding, and that's why he's pushed up this barrage against Sessions, because he's just nervous how close they may be getting.
And the talk about pardons.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that part of it was media-drawn. Media would ask whether he has the right to pardon himself or his family and things like that, and whether a president could be indicted. But basically, everything, it just seems like everything Trump is doing is somehow related to the fear of the Russia investigation. And I don't know what to make of it, but I know that the fact that he's still talking about Hillary Clinton, he's still talking about Obama, he's still talking about why isn't Hillary Clinton in jail. I mean, the thought of Obama saying, why isn't Mitt Romney in jail? Or I mean, it's just so...
Okay, we'll shift gears here again.
Let me get a Kleenex.
Okay, we had some, talk about a really busy week. We had changes in the White House communications team. You got Anthony Scaramucci in as the new White House communications director. Press Secretary Sean Spicer is out. What precipitated this?
Well, I mean, a lot of people will say, how did Spicer last as long as he did? He had no credibility. He often would say he would defend the White House and some of the most bald-faced things that they would say about the size of the crowds. Spicer once said, well, you know, Hitler didn't use chemical weapons against his own people. I mean, it's just, you know, really, gas chambers aren't included as chemical weapons. There are so many things he said that people would just shake their heads. And the thing is, Spicer came in with a good reputation. He was liked by the press when he was the press guy at the Republican National Committee under Reince Priebus. And that leads to the fact that Reince Priebus and Sean Spicer were furious that Scaramucci was named as the communications director. And now Scaramucci is basically tweeting that he thinks that Reince Priebus has been leaking the intelligence information to the press. And he's hinting about an FBI investigation and things like that. So, which makes me think that, one, Reince Priebus is not long for this world, and two, Scaramucci, he's an appealing guy, he's sharp, he's savvy, he's full of himself at times, unlike Sean Spicer, that, you know, he came in with a suit that was just ill-fitting, and he came in with a job that was ill-fitting. This seems like the perfect job for Scaramucci, even though he has no experience in politics or communications. He was a Goldman Sachs and a hedge fund manager. I mean, this is the guy who's now the head of communications for the White House, but he is very much like Donald Trump. Even though if you go on YouTube to 2015 and you see what Scaramucci thinks of Trump, it's ridiculous. He went on Fox saying that Trump is a fraud and a jerk and all these things. But, you know, that was 2015. That was ancient history. That was,
times change. People evolve, right?
Right.
Okay. Howard?
Well, I mean, it's obvious that the Priebus crowd is on the way out. And
they've had a pretty rocky start to this whole relationship.
Right.
I do hear, though, Ken, that Dancing with the Stars, I keep reading these reports that Dancing with the Stars would like to recruit Sean Spicer.
Oh, no. Well, I was going to say, oh, no, but I've never watched the show, and it gives me another reason never not to watch it, so it's okay.
Well,
I continue every day to watch WVXU.
To watch WVXU?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's kind of hard to do.
I stare at the radio. I'm just like, I can't watch TV anymore.
Howard and I are easy on the eyes. Not really. Ken, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. Howard, thank you, too.
Thank you.
Much appreciated.
Thanks, guys.
And political junkie Ken Rudin, WVXU politics reporter Howard Wilkinson were my guests this afternoon. And thank you for listening to Cincinnati Edition. You can find archives of our programs at WVXU.org. Pete Reitmeier was the producer for today's show. The assistant producer was Selena Reeder. Dave Shermer was the technical director. William White composed the Cincinnati Edition theme music. I'm Mark Haney. Stay tuned for Here and Now coming up next on 91.7 WVXU. Major changes could be in store for the operation of the Metropolitan Sewer District. The Cincinnati Fraternal Order of Police votes no confidence in Hamilton County Prosecutor Joe Dieters. And the police union plans to take a second vote on whether or not to participate in reviewing and refreshing the collaborative agreement. Join us as we discuss these and other stories in our weekly news review. That's on Cincinnati Edition, tomorrow afternoon at 1 on 91.7 WVXU.